November 13th, 2021, Los Angeles. Two women are dropped off by masked men at separate hospitals. 24-year-old Christy Giles is dead on arrival. 26-year-old Hilda Marcela Cabrales Arzola spends the next 2 weeks in a coma and passes away one day before her 27th birthday. The woman had gone out to a warehouse party the night before. There, they met a man named David Pierce and some friends. The group ended back at Pierce's apartment. Then, something goes wrong. Christy texts Hilda, "Let's go," with a wide eye emoji. Hilda replies, "Yes, I'll call an Uber, 10 minutes away." The Uber arrives, but they never get in. So, what happened in David Pierce's apartment that night? How did these two women go from partying in Los Angeles to being tossed out of a car by masked men at separate hospitals miles away from each other? On our next podcast series, we focus on the deaths of Christy and Hilda. David Pierce has been charged with murder. We'll relive the tragic night that took the lives of two beautiful women, hear from their families about the impact it had on their lives, and speak to renowned experts about the investigation into Pierce and his alleged history. We'll pull back the curtain on the ugly side of Hollywood, far from the cameras and paparazzi, explore the themes of drug-facilitated assaults and a predatory pattern of behavior. And we'll review new details about the case from Pierce's grand jury indictment. Plus, we'll look ahead to Pierce's upcoming murder trial as Christy and Hilda's families and loved ones seek justice. I'm Kelly Hyman, and this is Once Upon a Crime in Hollywood, Girls Night Out. When you think of Hollywood, what comes to mind? The big Hollywood sign? Is it the stars, the rich and the famous, the glitz and the glamour, the Oscars? Do you think of blockbuster movies, red carpet premieres, and star-studded after parties with the industry elites? The Hollywood social scene is a world of its own. It's exclusive and difficult to break into. For every movie premiere, award show, gala, there's just as many after parties, VIP events, and exclusive functions featuring stars ranging from A-list celebrities to D-list celebrities to completely unknowns and everyone else in between. The Los Angeles County spans over 3,000 square miles and is the home to nearly 13 million people. Almost 18 out of every 1,000 workers in Los Angeles are in the entertainment jobs, including production, directors, actors, the list goes on. LA is also the home to models, designers, photographers, and many more. Christy Giles, a 24-year-old fashion model from Birmingham, Alabama, moved to LA shortly after her 18th birthday. Christy had been modeling since she was 15. She grew up in Gardendale, a Jefferson County suburb in Birmingham, but eventually moved to Miami to focus on modeling. Let's bring in Dusty Giles, Christy's mother. Dusty, can you tell us about what Christy was like when she was growing up?
Growing up, Christy was two split people. She sat and watched America's Top Model with her sister, who's almost 6 years older than her, and her friends, and afterwards would go get her pink little high heels and march around the house and say, "Don't I look fierce, Mama? Don't I look fierce?" and I'd laugh. I'd tell her, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am, you did. And she would go in there to her daddy and do a fashion walk for him and ask him the same question. But at the same time, have lots of energy.
That energy would lead Christy to athletics, running track in eighth grade. She made all county that year. Then she moved on to soccer.
We put her in soccer. She loved it because it's never ending. It's like basketball, which she became a very good player. I mean, a sought after player. And she would even play and sub for an all boys team when they needed and she would actually be the more aggressive of all of them. And she played soccer until her 10th grade year.
That year, she entered her first pageant and stunned the judges, who thought she was much older.
There was a small one for a festival, and some of her friends were doing it, so she wanted to do it. Not knowing that it was a feeder to Miss Alabama Teen USA, and Christy won it. So she was expected to represent North Jefferson County for Alabama Teen USA. And she was 14. And she was runner-up. And not until they announced on stage that she would be going into, they were announcing how this one was going to be a freshman at University of Alabama or this one at UAB. And Christy is going to be a freshman at Gardendale High School come this fall. And the crowd kind of sucked in their breath because they had no idea that she was that young because of her height, and she had an older look, you know, not overdone makeup or anything like that, but they had no idea she was that young.
2 weeks later, she was walking in the Galleria Mall in Birmingham, Alabama, when she was approached by a modeling scout from Fox Models.
And he's like, we would really, really like to get her down to one of our model showcases. And there's one coming up in Orlando. So that's how there were 13 modeling agencies there that day, and Christy got called back by 10 of them, and they were a lot of the major ones. And once they found out her age, they wanted her to be a little bit older, but Miami said she's got the look, and Christy thought about it. They made an offer, and she turned 15 shortly afterwards.
As her modeling career continued to blossom, Christy moved to L.A., and bounced around different homes of friends, taking modeling gigs in London, Peru, and Mexico before getting her own apartment. In early 2019, Christy met Jan Siliers at an art gallery. Just 7 months later, the two eloped at a Burning Man in Nevada on August 28, 2019. Let's bring in Jan now. Jan, can you tell us about that first meeting and how your relationship with Christy developed?
So, Christy and I first met at an art gallery in West Hollywood. And she was celebrating a friend's birthday party, and I was out with a mutual friend of her and myself. And we sort of connected that night and, you know, had some like great conversation. And then over the next couple of days and weeks, we kept running into each other more and more. And then I asked her out on a date, and she couldn't make that date that I suggested. And she suggested a future date, which I guess she didn't realize at the time, but it happened to be Valentine's Day. And so we ended up having our first date on Valentine's Day in 2019. And you know, it was, sparks flew all night. It was a really great date, and we kind of were attached to the hip since then. And it was really, it was just a very easy, beautiful thing from the beginning. And she was, her energy was just very uplifting and joyful and easygoing. And she had the best sense of humor ever. So, and I think we were both equally enamored with each other. So it worked out. It worked out great. And then we traveled to a few places after that. We went to, in the following months, we went to Morocco, Portugal, Costa Rica. And then we went to Burning Man together, which, you know, was a very, like, I was building a camp that year at Burning Man. Which, if you don't know, is it's a lot of work. Everything that's at Burning Man is kind of put on by the people attending. There's not really much infrastructure put up by the Burning Man organization themselves. So she was all aboard and helping put everything together, and she was great with logistics and support, and was really my point person. Really that sort of work ethic and, you know, character of being was very, it was very attractive. And at the burn, we just decided to get married. it was a very spontaneous thing, but we were both feeling it. And then when we got back, we got our marriage license, and her parents were very surprised. My parents were very surprised, but everyone was very happy for us. And then it was pretty much a fairy tale relationship for, you know, from that point onwards.
The couple traveled the world together and eventually settled into an apartment on the beach in Marina del Rey with plans to move into the suburbs so they could have a yard and children. In 2021, Christy met Hilda Marcela Cabrales Arzola, a 26-year-old designer and architect from Mexico who had recently moved to LA to start her dream job in interior design. Christy was also studying interior design, and the two bonded over a mutual interest. Let's bring in Dr. Hilda Marcela Arzola Plasencia, Hilda's mom, who is also an emergency physician in Mexico. Doctor, tell us about Hilda growing up. How did she find her way to LA?
She was the first granddaughter in both sides of the family. So you can imagine what meant that for all the family. She was a light for all of us, and she still is. She grew like a normal kid, playing, singing, dancing, having fun with her friends. You know, she tried to bring out the good side of the people who were around of her, even when she was a kid. That's what I'm trying to tell you and to show, that she was such a beautiful person. What can I tell you? I'm her mother, and I'm proud, and I'm always really proud of her.
Hilda went to college at the University of Monterrey in Mexico, aiming to become an international lawyer. She soon changed to architecture and did some modeling.
She told me, I'm going to architecture. And I said, yes, I knew it. I knew it. I told you, because you always be like enjoying to be things fit with harmony, the beauty, putting beauty outside. And you know that that it's not only in the physical way. That's also in the interior way, in the spiritual way. She tried to get the people, the best of them. And I saw it that with her friends. And I told her, you know, you're like a big light with your friends. So that's kind of the way why she got in architecture. I really thought she will be like a fashion designer. And I said, if you want to go with that career, I have no problem, but do it good. Do it in the right way.
Hilda Marcella, called Marcella or Marcy by her friends, was top of her class at Universidad de Monterrey, a prestigious school in Mexico. Let's also welcome in Fernanda Cantasani, one of Hilda's closest friends. Fernanda, did you talk to Hilda a lot once she moved to LA?
Yes, in fact, we were talking almost all day. All day we were talking, because at that time, her dog Tomas was with me and my boyfriend of that time. We both were friends with her, and we stayed with her dog until she was, you know, finding a place to stay in LA, and she was going to come back to pick him up. And in the meantime, we were taking care of him. So, and also she was living with my ex-boyfriend at that time. So, I don't know, we had really a close relationship by the time she went to LA. So I will say almost every day we were talking on video call. She was always telling me what she was going to do at the day, you know, and also the last time I talked to her was the time was the day she went to this party. I remember she was in her office. We were talking and I was like, oh, what you are going to do today? And she was going to a party and, you know, she was so excited. I remember she was like, yeah, I will call you when I am getting dressed so you can tell me which outfit to, you know, to choose. And it was really like she was still in Monterrey. Our conversation was through the phone, but it was all the same. Like, we were always talking to each other.
On November 12th, 2021, Christy's husband, Jan, was in San Francisco to visit his parents for the weekend. He spoke with Christy that afternoon while she was taking a walk on the beach with their cat, Loki. She even sent him photos and a video with the caption, "Me and the Sand Panther Forever." Christy texts Jan, "I wish you were here." That night, Christy, Hilda, and another friend had plans for a girls' night out, starting at Soho House in West Hollywood before heading to a warehouse party in East LA after midnight. Let's now bring in Danielle Radin, an LA-based journalist for CBS Los Angeles. Danielle, what can you tell us about the Hollywood scene and the nature of these types of parties?
Warehouse parties in Los Angeles are under the radar. A lot of them are invite only. You have to know somebody. And the appeal is that they stay open late after the bars close down at 2 a.m. So many people want to keep the party going. They'll try to get an invitation to these warehouse parties. They can be a speakeasy type setup, like behind a vending machine or something with a passcode. There's a lot of dancing in these warehouse parties and a lot of drugs. So you can easily get any drug imaginable at a lot of these parties.
So what happened with Christy and Hilda that night?
Christy is planning a fun girls' night out with her friend Hilda. She's texting with Jan, telling him she's not quite sure what the plan is yet. And then he goes to sleep early. Christy and Hilda go out first to Soho House in West Hollywood. It's a popular place to be on a Friday night. Just after midnight, they decide to see a DJ that they like at a warehouse party in East LA. It's at this warehouse party in the VIP section that photographs show Christy and Hilda are with David Pierce. Around 4:51 in the morning, now we're into Saturday, November 13th, surveillance video shows Christy and Hilda leaving the party with Pierce and his friends. They all get into a car. Around 5:30 in the morning is the last known text between Christy and Hilda. We see Christy texting her saying, "Let's go," with a wide-eyed blushing emoji. Hilda says, "Yes, I'll call an Uber 10 minutes away." It's clear they're probably in the same room with the suspects and can't speak out loud for some reason, so they have to text each other. something is happening to make them uncomfortable enough to feel like they need to get out of there without alerting the men to that. An Uber does pull up, waits 5 minutes, nobody gets in, and it drives away.
Around 1 a.m., Christy had text Jan, but he had already fallen asleep. He woke up the next morning around 7 a.m. and texted her, "Good morning." After a few hours, Christy hadn't responded. Jan assumed she was sleeping in. Then he noticed something strange. Christy and Jan shared their location with each other through their phones, and Jan noticed Christy's location was one he didn't recognize. Her phone pinged at 8641 West Olympic Boulevard. When Jan checked back in a few hours, Christy's location had changed to an address in Culver City, the Southern California Hospital. Jan, take us through what happened next.
I was up visiting my my dad in the Bay Area, and she was going out with some friends, and told her to have fun tonight. And then, you know, my parents are early risers. I think I went to sleep at like 9 or 10 p.m. that night, and I woke up at like 6 or 7. And she'd sent me a couple of texts throughout the night when I was asleep, and I responded in the morning. And she never told me that she'd gotten home, so I checked her location, and she was at that address on Olympic. And I was like, that's interesting, because usually she'll go home, you know, she doesn't really spend the night at other people's places. So I was waiting to hear from her, and at like 2 or 3 o'clock, I reached out, and I was like, I told her I was worried about her, that I hadn't heard from her, and pleased to respond, and still hadn't heard from her. And then obviously my level of anxiety and worry are increasing constantly at this point. I went out for a hike with my dad at about like 3:30 or 4. I got back from the hike into cell phone reception area around like 5 p.m. And then I saw that her location had moved to the Culver City emergency room. And I was immediately on high alert. I called the emergency room and asked them what the situation was and if she was there, and if they could give me any further information. And they transferred me to one of the ER nurses, and they verified my information about who I was, and told me that they're trying to resuscitate her. And obviously that was highly worrying for me, disturbing about, you know, what was going down and why she was needing to be resuscitated. And they told me that they'd call me back. Immediately after they hung up, I called her parents and told them what the situation was. Her mom then called the ER, and the ER told her mom that she had passed away. And her mom called me back to let me know the news. And I was already on my way back to the airport in San Francisco for my flight back. Well, for a flight back that I just bought, because I knew I needed to get back immediately.
Dusty, what went through your mind when you received that call from Jan about your daughter?
When Jan saw and rechecked and saw that her location had pinged in it from where it had been for 10 to 12 hours to, and it was, he looked up the address and everything, and it was Culver City Hospital. He called, and they wouldn't tell him anything. They wouldn't confirm. He says, well, I know my wife, my number's there. And he thought, she's sorry, sir. And so he hung up, and then he called me. I'm a retired nurse manager, and I've worked all over the hospital for many years in the medical field. And he thought that I would have a better chance of getting information long distance than because they weren't able to talk to him. So I took the number, and I immediately called. I just asked for the switched to the emergency room, and the person that answered the phone, I immediately said, my name is Dusty Giles. I live in Alabama. We have been looking for my daughter, and her phone has pinged. And so we were alerted that she was at your hospital. And he asked me, how was I alerted? I said, because she shared your location. And her husband's already called and was told that they could not talk to him. And he said, that's because of some issues. And I said, well, can you please tell me, do I need to get a ticket? Get on an airplane? Is this something serious? Can I talk to Christy? Is there any way at all I can talk to the doctor or the nurse that's taking care of her and get a live update so that I can, and I will verify her husband's name and his address and his telephone number and everything so that you can talk to him freely as well. And that's when I was told that it, yes, Christy was in the emergency room there at Culver City Hospital, but that unfortunately she did not make it. I said, what do you mean she didn't make it? I understand. I mean, but how, what means? I mean, are we talking an overdose, a car accident, a stabbing, a shooting, or what? I mean, tell me what has happened to my daughter. Again, I live in Alabama and need to make sure, you know, is she still, I get that you're telling me that she's no longer with us, but I need more information. And at that time, the nurse, who was a male, could only tell me that all I can tell you now is that it is a police matter. And then I immediately called Ron back, and he was already at the airport in San Francisco on the next available flight back to L.A., and I said, Jan, you need to sit down. He said, no, I'm at the airport. And I said, well, that's good. I did talk to the hospital, and they were able to speak to me. And it appears that two men dumped her body, and that's why they're not giving any information to any men that call, because it could be the culprit of, and who dropped her off, checking to see if she's alive or not, or whatever. And I said, and all they would tell me is that she didn't make it, and that it's a police matter, and that two men dropped her, threw her out of their car on the concrete in the bushes in front of, close to the hospital entrance. And that was all I was told. And that there is somebody on premises that had been a girlfriend that had been out with them. And he said, I'm on the, okay, they're boarding the plane now. And when he got off the plane, he went straight to Culver City ER, where he met and met the detectives. And met, and from there, information was shared freely between the police department and Jan and me and my husband.
We have Christy's dad, Leslie Wayne Giles, here as well. How difficult was that for you to take in?
Well, I heard Dusty scream and run back there and ask her what the matter is. She said, Christy is dead. And I don't know what I could say other.
You said, oh, no, not my Christy.
No, I was really numb to it for, I don't know, 2-3 days where I didn't really. I didn't believe it, I knew it was true. I just didn't accept it happening. I didn't really show a lot of emotion.
Christy was pronounced dead on arrival at Southern California Medical Center in Culver City. When Jan arrived at the hospital, the third friend who had accompanied Christy and Hilda to the warehouse party was already there. She'd been trying to reach Hilda. The friend finally got a call from a different hospital, Kaiser West Los Angeles, telling her Hilda was dropped off by men wearing bandana masks with no license plates on their vehicle. Doctors were able to revive Hilda's heart, but her brain had already suffered severe trauma and she was left unresponsive in a coma. Back to Hilda's mom. How did you find out Hilda was in the hospital?
I received a phone call from the wife of Ferris' father. Luis is the name. And she called me and told me, you know, something happened with Marce. They called us telling that she was very ill in the hospital. She was intubated because she had some kind of gastrointestinal disease. And that's how I found that she was very ill. So when we get the notice, at that time, I didn't have my passport. It was expired, and, you know, it was the COVID time, and it was very difficult to have a point to get out.
It took the help from Mexican and U.S. authorities to get Hilda's mother a passport. She arrived in Los Angeles on Thursday of that week. As a doctor, other family and friends wanted her there to help make difficult decisions.
They arrived first, and they told me, you know, you have to be here because this is not good. And as you're a doctor, you know, that kind of things that I don't like to mix with all this, but it's a reality that I can't close my eyes because it's true. He told me, I need you here because you have to help me to take decisions, important decisions with her.
What were those first days like when your daughter was in the hospital? And what did the hospital staff tell you?
Since we received the phone call, I reached out to the hospital. We called. I spoke with some kind of social worker, and she sent me the phone call with the doctor who was in the ICU. It was a neurologist, and he told me things are not good. We don't know how time she wasn't breathing. We just received her in total failure, heart failure, and cardiac arrest. So we make the CPR one and over and over and over time. We brought her back, and things are not good. Her signs, vital signs, are very low. And I know for sure that that's not good. The doctor told me we're trying to stabilize her, and we're giving her, you know, all the care we can to see if she can respond. And when we finally arrived and we saw her lying intubated, I never, ever, ever expect to see her like that. And the doctors showed me her MRI scan, and what I saw, it's awful. You know, I knew since they showed me that things were need a miracle in few words, you know, because there were very, 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 very low chances that she could recover from that. And even that we were all the time as we could by her side, trying to give her the strength to make the choice that she want. If she want to stay, we'll be here for her. If she want to go, with all the pain it caused, we support that.
What did you think when the hospital staff told you she was dropped off outside the hospital by masked men?
There were a lot of versions that if some guys left her outside the hospital in the street, and then they said no, they brought her into the emergency department, and then, you know, a lot of versions. But the doctor told me We don't know what happened. She just arrived unconscious. It seems like they were two men wearing masks who left her in the emergency department. They just leap or drop her there and they disappear. So at that time, as Fer already told you, we were a lot confused. There was a lot of confusion. And my mind was centered in what is going on with her. How is she? That's all my question that was, you know, in my mind. It was, what? How is she? Is she fine? Is she breathing? Is she, can she hear me? Can she not? Can I speak with her? But at that time, you know, the neurologist was very, very clear with me, with us. He told us since the very first moment, she is very, very ill. It's just, you know, we try to get her out of that cardiac arrest. She respond. That's why we are trying to give her another chance, because she's young. And that's what my mind was all the time, that, you know, you can fight, you can go on, please try to be well. But all the things that were around that night, what happened, who were those guys, there were all speculations. We didn't know anything, just like she were partying. And since she were in the hospital, fighting for her life.
Toxicology tests for Hilda came back containing trace amounts of amphetamines and cocaine. Because Christy had already passed away, an autopsy was needed to conduct a toxicology exam on her, which would take longer for the results to come back. Christy's body was eventually sent back to Alabama with her family. She was cremated, with half her ashes going to Yon to scatter in places they loved. Christy's mom placed the rest of the ashes in an urn inside a butterfly box, along with her wedding dress she didn't get the chance to wear.
There are some questions tonight about the death of a young model.
She went out for a night with friends. Somehow it ended with her body being left at a local hospital. Eyewitness News reporter Josh Haskell talked to her husband. Josh is live in Culver City with the story. Josh.
And Giovanna, a producer who worked with Giles, said that many in young Hollywood are mourning this loss. The LAPD believes that it was a drug overdose that turned fatal, but family and friends believe that it was foul play.
Meanwhile, her husband and Dohi, the friend who was with them that night, began to try and piece together what happened. Let's bring in Trinka Parada, retired narcotics detective after 25 years with the Los Angeles Police Department. What goes through your mind as an investigator with the initial facts as following? Two women dropped off at separate hospitals by masked men concealing their license plates, the two text messages between the girls, and the results of the toxicology report.
Well, obviously the early details were disturbing. If you find somebody along the road or staggering down the street that is clearly in medical need, you either call 911 or you grab them and you go straight to the hospital. You don't go home and put on a mask and take off your license plates. And, you know, it was initial, even the most initial information was pretty disturbing and pretty obvious that this was a serious case. Dropping them off like that and, you know, different places, even though they were quickly connected, you know, it just obviously isn't normal behavior.
As Jan attempted to find answers, Hilda's family was still at her side in the hospital. She was in a coma for 2 weeks. We also have Fernanda Cabrales Arzola, Hilda's younger sister. Fernanda, you were also there with your mother in the hospital. How difficult were those 2 weeks for your family?
It was, what can I say? It was absolutely devastating. I think nothing can prepare you to see someone you love fighting for their life. And for sure, I think those weeks were the hardest of our lives. I think it was mainly like we held on to the hope that she would recover, that she would wake up, pull through. But I think each passing day was filled with uncertainty, of course, pain, and not knowing what will happen. But at the same time, we were grateful also, you know, to her that we were finally be able to be by her side. I have the feeling like she was fighting and she was waiting for us to be with her. And just grateful to be by her side, holding her hand, telling her she wasn't alone.
Back to Fair Canastani, Hilda's friend. What was the reaction from friends back home in Mexico?
We were in Alan's apartment. He's my ex-boyfriend, but also he was really a good friend of Marcela. I was trying to call her all day. This day I was trying to call her because, since I told you before, we were always talking on the phone, video call. We were always talking to each other. So it was strange for me that she was not answering. The phone was ringing, but the call was being denied. I remember this so much. And I was like, okay, it's strange. Maybe she's somewhere, I don't know, hanging with someone. So I just stopped calling. And after a few hours, a friend, she texted us like, hey, someone can give me the number of a family member of Marcela. I need a phone number. And I was like, what is happening? Everyone was so confused. We were a bit stressed, but we were also hoping everything was okay. So Dohi called me and she explained to me that first she was trying to explain that her friend Christy was found like in the emergency, she was dropped dead and that they were not able to revive her, and that she was waiting in the hospital with Marce, that Marce was like in a really bad condition, but she was alive. She told me she was alive, and that she was waiting for the doctor to give her information. Of course, that the fact that Christy was dropped already dead was ringing like I don't know. We were imagining the worst things, of course, because you cannot, I don't know, these things doesn't happen like this. You know, you're not alive at some moment and another someone is dropping you dead in a random hospital, you know. So we were, at this moment, we called again the father of Marcela. We told him what we knew. We told him where she was in the hospital. We tried to give him all the information we could find, and at this time it was really hard conversation with him. I remember because when we were saying this, we were hearing like, I don't know, he was crying all the time, the father of Marcela, of course. So we were it was so hard for us to be the ones who called, you know, and not being able to provide like the real information because we were not there. So we were trying, and at the same time we were trying to help. So I remember he asked us like, please help me and book me a flight to LA as soon as possible. I cannot think, please help me. So we booked this flight, and the next thing I knew, he was already there. And yeah, I remember also these moments, like the whole 2 weeks she was in the hospital fighting for her life. We were also like every day we were just waiting for any news. And it was really a hard 2 weeks. It was, I guess it was the worst nightmare someone can be in. It was really hard for everyone, and also was really hard to hear Marcela's father say, like, to keep us updated and hear the words he was saying, like, no, your friend is not going to be able to make it. The doctors are saying she's really in a bad situation. And I remember when he called us and he told us, like, that him and yes, that the family decided to disconnect Marcela. Remember when he said this to us, I don't know, everyone, old friends of Marce were in the home of Alan, and we received this message of the father of Marce, and it was really hard to accept that she will be gone in a few days. So for me, I speak for myself, but for me it really was like the most horrible thing in my life.
On November 24th, just one day before her 27th birthday, Hilda was pronounced dead. Hilda's mom and Fernanda, we're so sorry for your loss. Can you share with us where she was laid to rest?
My sister is currently resting in Durango, which is our hometown in Mexico. She's laid to rest alongside our grandfather in a church. And we choose to remember her for who she was in life, like joyful, loving person, enjoying life. And I know many people focus on how she passed, since that's the way you got to know her. But, you know, her life was like so much more, and it goes beyond everything that happened that night. She was a sister that I admired, a devoted daughter at the same time, a mother to her dog, Tomas, a friend, a true friend. And I think that's how we choose to remember her. And that's how we also try to honor her memory, like living as she would have liked us to do.
I can tell you that this is a life-changing situation. It will never, ever be the same it was. And nothing can fill that space that she left. But as already Phil told you, Fernanda told you, we prefer to remember like a very loving person, like a pushing person, you know, to try the, you can do it, you can do it, come on. And the light of our lives. For me, as I already told you at the beginning of this interview, I'm proud of her, and I'm always will be proud of her, always.
As both families mourn the loss of their daughters, sisters, a wife, a best friend, the police investigation was starting to heat up. In our next episode, we look deeper into the investigation, what police found when they went to the residence at 8641 West Olympic Boulevard, and what we know about David Pierce. I'm Kelly Hyman, and this is Once Upon a Crime in Hollywood, Girls Night Out.